Well, good day and welcome back to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we are here with some great friends, some good times, talking about some hot topics and maybe some difficult topics that we need to kind of bring up because of some things that people think won't happen maybe anymore. Maybe we've defeated things like terrorism and we don't need to worry about it anymore. Or do we? So we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in this episode. But before we get to that, let's go ahead and bring in my esteemed co-host, Sam Bradley. How you doing?
I'm good. And I so love being esteemed. I have to go look that up and find out what that actually means. But it makes me feel really good, Jamie. I am fine. We're a bit windy out here in the West. I really wish that would mean rain, but I don't see that that's going to happen. One of these days we might get some. That would be a good thing. But this is fun because we have one of our partners, Jim Logan, who we don't get to capture all that often. So we're lucky when we can grab him because he's a lot of fun to talk to. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how's it going? So we've got plenty of rain here, Sam. I'll send it by FedEx to you. And we'll be good. We've actually had two pretty decent flooding events in the last couple of months. Matter of fact, the last one was September the 11th, ironically. And we had some storms roll through here yesterday. We were lucky enough to dodge the bullet on that. And I think some folks to our east weren't as lucky. We had several tornadoes touched down and within the state, within the southeastern United States where I'm located right now. So we've had a little bumpy ride here recently. So wish you had some more rain and we had some of your sunshine.
Well, you know what? That's the irony. You've got too much water. We don't have enough. We should be working a deal
right
here.
Sounds like a plan. Well, you know, we talked about Urban Shield last week, Sam, and we really appreciate you bringing in some information on that from the program that you work through in your community there in the Bay Area in California. And it seems to me that what we need to really think about is that there are some other topics that come out of Urban Shield because they focus on some other issues like terrorism, not just hostile MCIs and things like that. But terrorism is a specific kind of hostile MCI. And you made the comment last week that maybe we've become a little complacent about that. And I think, you know, together we agreed maybe it was a good idea to visit this topic of, is terrorism something we're really ready for?
Yeah, and, you know, it's been a few years since 9/11. And, you know, what people don't realize is the federal government does a really good job of mitigating threats daily that the public doesn't generally know about. And consider it from this perspective. What is the point of terrorism? It is to scare people. So if we were to say, wow, this happened and this happened and this happened, it would scare people, which is kind of giving them what they want. So a lot of these things are being handled every day and you know, at the airports and who knows what all. But, you know, it's being taken care of. And so don't think that nothing's going on out there or that there are no threats to our country, because I don't personally believe that's the case. But I thought I'd make a little run through some of the reputable sites and just kind of see what some of the headlines were. And I'm just going to throw some of these out at you guys and then see what you might want to grab onto and talk a little bit about, because this is all stuff that's happening. We have all the beheadings going on that seem to be occurring with these unfortunate folks that went out there to report the news and ended up being victims of that. One headline said, imminent terrorist attack warning by feds on the U.S. border. So there seems to be a focus on that. Drone attacks. Now, this is interesting, Jamie, because well, you and I and the boys talked about drones at one point and how they might be helpful in search and rescues and looking at wildland fires, but we never really thought about them in terms of how they might work against them. This particular story talked about an NYPD helicopter that came into close contact with one and basically took off because they almost collided with the darn thing. But, I mean, there is some potential for using drones to wreak some havoc. There was a plot out there, according to one site, about blowing up the Eiffel Tower, the Louvre, and a nuclear power plant. Fortunately, that were foiled. So this goes back to my point that, you know, some of these events are being foiled without us really even knowing about them. Now, here's some really interesting stuff, and we've been talking, you know, ISIS, of course, is the big topic on the news, but it is saying that the threat to U.S. targets is high, especially in New York, and I need to read more about that, but New York still seems to be a target. And one thing we don't think about too much because we look at these larger groups of people is that there still are a lot of individuals out there motivated by the jihadist ideology, which we may not be looking at as closely. I don't know, and maybe, Jim, you've probably been traveling more than Jamie and I have. Well, actually, I can't say that about Jamie. Of course, we all will be in a few weeks, but apparently the whole cell phone thing is a big deal because of the concern of being able to make a bomb with a cell phone, that they are having people turn their cell phones on because that's been a big concern. A couple other things here. There is still concern about blowing up aircraft, and to the extent that people, this kind of blows me away, people will actually implant things inside their bodies that they can somehow activate, because we've been able to find things that people put in their shoes or attach to their bodies somehow, but not inside. I'm not quite sure. Especially if it's something that can't be detected through one of those fancy medical detectors. These things are like surgically implanted, and that's pretty scary. The last thing here is there's another group out there identified called the Khorasan, who are defined as forward-deployed al-Qaeda operatives who are engaging in the Arabian Peninsula and, I guess, engaging with other groups. And the quote was, "This is a cell in Syria that may be the most intent on hitting the United States or its installations overseas with a terror attack." And the last thing, which was really a surprise, was threatening U.S. Military with attacks on their family members. And I guess what they might be doing is finding out information from people through social media, which that's a whole conversation, and finding out where their families are and threatening their families within the country. And that's one I had never heard before. So, guys, run with it.
Well, I think, Jim, you know, you probably have some thoughts on this as well. I know there were some recent news stories where ISIS leaders are calling on individuals that are sympathetic to their cause to carry out attacks. Probably a month or so ago, there was an attack foiled in Australia from someone who was apparently sympathetic to ISIS. There's been at least one individual I know of that was taken into custody in the United States en route to a trip to join ISIS terrorists or allegedly join ISIS terrorists and join their ranks as an American citizen. And so there are some things that are a concern here, and I think that we need to not necessarily become frantic about it, but be more vigilant. Would you say that's appropriate, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of doomsday, theories of how all this, the next terrorist event will go down. We're talking about cyber terrorism now, and that's a real threat. We see that on the hackers every day, with these large financial institutions and personal information and things like that. But I think it can go a little further. We've been talking a lot about Ebola, and so this is another thing we've thought about. That if the terror group wanted to, they could infect themselves with smallpox. Well, that's not really something that's out there much, but now they know where to go and get Ebola. And, if they're committed to their cause, a lot of them will do anything. So that's not to scare anybody, but, anything, like Sam says, it can cause panic. That's the whole motivator for them, for a lot of people. So the mindset of a terrorist is, to get attention for a cause. And then you've got the whole the religious terrorist, that, you know, if we're coming from the ISIS or ISIL aspect, it's, you know, it's to wipe out anybody who doesn't agree with their their religion. And so it's real. It's out there. We're talking about Urban Shield. We're talking about UASI, which stands for Urban Area Security Initiative. And all those things are based and brought to the forefront in our lab and in our disciplines because of terrorism. And so we've had a lull here in the homeland, on that forefront. And a lot of that money has dried up because we think, or our legislation thinks and votes that we're okay. And we certainly are better than we were, you know, back in 2001. We're certainly better, but the threats are still there. And it's just going to take one more event for these things to, get funding and education to sustain what we've, when we started, you know, several years ago. So it's out there. It's not a matter, this is said a lot, right? It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Yeah, you made a good point, Jim, on, funding drying up, because I remember when we got this plethora of Mark I kits for nerve gas exposure for our fire and EMS people, and those all expired in 2011. And now there's no grant funding to get those. So, you know, as scary as it may sound, you know, this is providing prime opportunity for terrorists to step in and say, okay, we're off our game. We're not as prepared as we used to be, you know, directly after 9/11. And, you know, maybe now's a good time to jump in there. And as much as I hate to think that, it's the truth.
Well, and I have a question for you. Don't you think, and I had some other people that mentioned this to me, that we went way overboard with some of the funding. A lot of organizations, a lot of jurisdictions bought things they really didn't need because it was just out there and we could buy it. I mean, do we prepare? I guess the question is, do we prepare for so many specific emergencies that we can't physically walk because we're carrying every kind of antidote and every kind of preparation kit and everything else in our packs? Or do we become generalists and prepare for a general event because it's impossible to prepare for every specific event effectively?
I think you're right, and what you reminded me of when you said that was, I know that there were hospitals that acquired bunches and bunches of stuff, and then they never trained anybody on how to use it. So they still have bunches and bunches of stuff that they wouldn't know how to use in an emergency. So, and we were talking a little bit last week about the necessity of training for these events and being on top of your game when they hit, and didn't work. I mean, what does it do to have all this stuff if nobody really knows how to use it? And then you have the issue of personnel coming and going. And so we have to remind ourselves to do not just refresher training for existing personnel, but training for those new people coming through. What do you think, Jim?
Well, it's certainly important to keep, you know, keep the focus. The money's dried up. There's a lot of, people started calling them toys instead of tools. And there's a lot of things initially bought that, we started with WMD, right? That's where it all kind of started.
Right.
And you mentioned Mark I kits or Duodote, now they're Duodote kits. So it all started with WMD, and we got focused on that, and we had to change people's thinking after 9/11 to, hey, it's terrorist, and then, heck, we had Katrina, and then, hey, this needs to be all hazards. So, Jamie, you're right. So a lot of this funding that we got from the government was to provide for tools, equipment, everything from PPE to medical packs to, law enforcement equipment to, you know, armored vehicles, and that's where all that, you know, stuff came up in Ferguson. Those were things that were probably bought with federal dollars. So all this stuff, it's not bad. It's good. It helps to be prepared, but you have to be careful that, and you're willing to make the commitment to, one, maintain it once you get it. Don't expect the grant to sustain it as far as maintaining your vehicles or equipment. This is stuff that's given a lot of administrators fall into the, you know, yeah, you gave me this, so I don't have to buy anything ever again. You're supposed to provide it for me every time. All this equipment is supposed to supplement what you already have. I kind of looked at it after a while like an entitlement. A lot of these people, you know, it kind of had their hand out saying, well, we need this, we have that. And, you know, this broke, can you fix it? Is grant funded? No, that's, you know, if we're going to give you, we're going to, you know, let you have $100,000 piece of equipment, the least you can do is maintain it and, you know, when you accept it, that it has to be, and we had to do some of that, is, you know, sign an MOU, a memorandum of understanding that if you accept this equipment, you are fully responsible for it, you're responsible for maintaining it, keeping it gas in it, you know, insurance on it, and those kind of things. And a lot of people didn't understand that's how that worked. But you're right, Jamie, there's a lot of tools out there back in the day, a lot of people got in trouble for ordering, you know, stuff like leather jackets for police departments. Well, that doesn't really help you, you know, it may keep you warm, right? But there are a lot of people that got really fined and some served some time because they bought this. So they came up with an approved equipment list. The federal government, which is a lesson to learn. And I think one of the things that we're going to learn, not if but when this happens again, is that there needs to be some kind of sustainment. I know we all suffer with, you know, the economic downfall and everybody's trying to save money. And but I think it's something that and there's still efforts right now at the federal government level, at state federal government level, to keep these programs alive. So there's still our lobbyists that pushes to keep this stuff going.
Yeah, and Jamie, I'm thinking you probably know more about hospitals than we do because we're more pre-hospital. But I know that a lot of our local hospitals, and I think it's a good thing and it was well worth the money, we're trained on management of hazardous materials, and some of them all the way up to the wearing the funny suits because of the potential of somebody who's contaminated walking into an ER. And so they provided showers, they provided this training. But again, you look at this 10 years later and say, are those people that took all that training still around? Not alive, I didn't mean to say that. Are they still around, and is there funding now to train new people if they're not? Again, like Jim was saying, it's a matter of sustaining not just the equipment but the people and keeping them trained up. How do you feel in terms of the hospitals being prepared for these kinds of events?
My feeling is that many hospitals fall into the same training issues that pre-hospital systems do, fire departments, police departments, and others, that you train for the most recently current thing. Like right now, everybody's going nuts training for Ebola. And so maybe some of this stuff is cross-trained, but you're right in being concerned that where are those people that got that initial training, and has that been maintained so that there's always a cadre of trained individuals that can implement these shower systems, these decon systems, these isolation rooms and things like that, that may come in handy in the current situation we have with an infectious substance outbreak. You know, and this is where I think that being generalists is probably a better idea than having everyone specialize in a million different things and maybe having one specialist who then educates. And I think this is one of the things that, you know, the CDC has started doing well with the Ebola outbreak is saying, you know, we're going to go around. If there's an identified patient in a hospital, we're going to send a team to that hospital to help them learn how to properly don and doff gear, to help them learn about infectious substance control, and to learn about how to properly care for that patient. And I think that coupled with some general training on the part of the overall hospital staff, you can bring in that supplementary training for a specific situation when it is warranted. But like you said, I think most of those hospitals no longer have maintained the training for those field hospitals that they got, you know, those tent hospitals that they got grant funding for that are sitting in a garage on the hospital property somewhere, and things like that. There probably aren't too many people left working at that facility that still remember how to set that tent up.
Right.
Yeah, that's the scary part. But you also made a good point. How much of this hazardous materials training and that equipment can now be repurposed, if you will, for this Ebola outbreak? I hadn't thought about that. What do you think, Jim?
Well, I mean, that's so those level A suits, level B suits. I mean, some of it's overkill for, we're talking about Ebola again, but a lot of those things, you know, like everything else these days, have expiration dates on them. And so, again, it's up to departments and agencies to keep that equipment up. But, yeah, they could be repurposed. It's a hazardous material, right? So it needs to be directed towards that. And as we've seen in Dallas and other areas that, you know, this equipment is being used for that. These specialized teams are being used for that. And a lot of, you know, hazmat teams think they're just for the tanker or whatever. So they have to rethink. The hazard material spill or the tanker explosion or whatever's leaking. But now we have, you know, apparently we have people leaking, right? So their job that is a hazmat, and that's what they're trained for. And so it's a medical issue. It's a hazmat issue. It's an issue that all of us have to rethink how we're to respond to it, including law enforcement and the sheriff's deputy that was involved in the quarantine effort in Dallas. You can't go knock on the door of someone's home who you seriously suspect of having a confirmed case and walk up in an environment like that unprotected. And I believe that's, if the information is correct, that's what happened. Luckily, he tested negative, and we're going to see a lot of false positives probably with this, but he was tested negative and everything was good. Lesson learned there is if you're going to serve a warrant or you're going to quarantine with the help of the health department, be prepared to go in and address that situation properly. There again, we talked about silos in the last episode, you know, living in those silos. We need to have integrated approaches to things like Ebola. You can't be in your own little world, your own little vacuum. We have to embrace each other. When we talk about planning, when we talk about preparedness and mitigation of these events, I think I'm getting way off the terrorism thing, but we're back in the Ebola. But we've got to in terrorism, right? And because we saw that in 9/11, we didn't have interoperability, we didn't have information sharing, and so we're in 2014 and we're dealing with Ebola. We're still kind of crawling. We're probably walking instead of crawling. We're better than we were, but we need to remember those lessons that were hard learned from the 9/11 and from the Katrinas and things like that, and really put that in place. So that's kind of, you know, in my world I work in, I'm a paramedic and a firefighter, but I'm also responsible for the emergency management program here in the city that I live in. And so that's my goal right now, is to remind everybody to that we've got to play in the same sandbox. We got to educate together on this. We got to train together. We have to prepare together on issues like this.
Well, and I mean, bring it back to the terrorism topic. I think you're right, Jim, that we've come forward a little bit at least. And I think one piece of evidence of that is that the response to the Boston bombing, which was a terrorist event, you know, we lost lives, but overall, my impression of that response was overall very positive, that, you know, the system seemed to work the way it was supposed to.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think because of the event it was, the mass gathering, if you will, the special event, there we were more prepared for that than I think we have been for anything else, because as I understand it, at the finish line right there, there's a clinic, there's a hospital, they were ready for stuff to happen. They had police, and they had a plan. And that's all I'm saying is for events like that, you know, that was a marathon. But they had things in place, and they had worked together collectively to, you know, if this happens, this is how we react to it. If that happens, this is how we react to it. And I think they planned appropriately and were prepared. And I'm just saying, you know, in nobody's mind really were they. I don't think they were preparing for a terrorist event specifically. I could be wrong, but they were ready. They had their medical element. They had their law enforcement. They had everything. Everything seemed to just run smoothly like it should have if something were to happen. And that's kind of what we have to keep in mind as we go forward with the next thing that we have to deal with.
And that's something that I think I'm very impressed with the way that you guys at Paragon manage your training evolutions, in that you encourage this cross-pollination, this getting out of our silos, inviting all the stakeholders to the table, not just coming in and saying, all right, we're doing our EMS training night, and across town, the police are doing their police training night, and over at the hospital, they're doing hospital training. You bring them all to the table and say, we need to work together and do this training evolution together so that we're better prepared as a community.
Well, you know, certainly one of the things that we've learned, you know, from the California, the wildfires out west, right, is incident command. And so the government has made us all be compliant with ICS 100, 200, 700, 800, 300, 400, whatever it is. And we go and set these classes, and we talk the talk. But what we've learned by going on these disasters with different groups that we're involved in is that if you're to be competent, you've got to work together, because the word unified command means nothing if you're not unified, right? And so you can't talk apples and bananas if you're not in the same room, and that's or the same event. You can't be at the one edge of the parking lot and us at the other. And you know, the medical branch is not something that hangs off of an oak tree. It's an integral part of what goes on. And that's really when we started Paragons. What we saw is medical in the ICS was kind of over here by itself. It's a branch, but it wasn't integrated into everything else. Maybe different other places, but what we were seeing in the worlds that we were in is that we needed to bring all those elements of rescue, firefighting, law enforcement, all those branches together and actually work it to help the people in the different disciplines not just be compliant in it, but competent in it and comfortable in those roles and those branches.
Really good point.
Yeah.
It's just not a matter of learning it. It's a matter of gaining a level of comfort in it, and such that you're going to sustain that training. You're going to remember it when you need it. It starts to become muscle memory, and that, I imagine, takes a lot of retraining and refreshing and interacting with other agencies, like you said. That's a really good point.
Well, we could probably... we could probably talk about terrorism all night, and maybe we need to revisit this on a regular basis so that we don't become complacent. I'd urge people to, if they want to do more training along these lines and learn more about what's going on out there, and educate yourselves. And one of the best ways to do that is talk to the folks over at Paragon Medical Education Group, and Jim and Joe Holly and the rest of the team, because they can bring a unique perspective and a unique training experience to your system and bring in all the stakeholders and provide valuable educational opportunities for everyone that's there, with people just like them acting as instructors. And I think that it's one of the things that makes you guys so unique in what I see going on out there in the way of education, Jim.
Yeah. So, like you said, we can come to you, and design, and you can customize a course for you, whether it be hostile MCI or a disaster, like a tornado, earthquake, what have you. We have those folks that have walked in those shoes to facilitate the classes. So it's not a lot of lip service. Folks that have never been there, it's folks that have been actually have the experience and have not only the experience, but have also the education to bring you that. Also, we provide CEUs, so it's kind of a turnkey training opportunity, and it's different. It's interactive. We use human patient simulators, live actors, cadavers, which is unique to what we do. So we actually replicate whatever scenario that your agency or department chooses to do. We replicate those injuries on human tissue. We do that by the gracious gift of the donors that we have through the Medical Education Research Institute here in Memphis. They have assigned their donation to us to replicate those injuries, so we can, discipline, as a group, our disciplines, learn. So this would qualify for that, donating your body to science. And it's one thing to learn something on a piece of plastic, and we all know that's the intubation head. One is harder than the other one, and you pick this one because it's easier. This one, we can make it difficult, very difficult, and we can make it realistic, and we can replicate the injuries that you would see in these different types of disasters.
And it's a lot of fun, too.
Also, yeah. Jim, I would guess also that if any particular area had a specific need for training, that you'd probably sit down with them and figure out how to accommodate that.
Well, that's exactly what we do. So a lot of times, people say, how much does it cost? Well, it's not inexpensive, but you get what you pay for. And to be prepared and competent and comfortable in your procedures that you do, your high-risk, low-frequency procedures. We go through all those types of things that a client would want. So those are questions that we ask. It costs, but there are ways to defer costs through grants, through sponsorships with different companies that we have relationships with. And that's one thing that we bring to the table also. We go over basic techniques and procedures, but we also take a look at what's new on the market. We look at innovative products that you see at trade shows. We take those, we form relationships with those companies, and we allow the end user to experience what that product is, whether it's a piece of junk, you tell the company it's a piece of junk, or if it's good. I mean, there's some good stuff out there, some bad stuff out there, as you guys know. But the only way to know if your service can benefit from it is to use it in a simulated environment, under stress immersion, and on human tissue. So, you know, it's, you know, we've all been to those trade shows where it's like, you know, the salesperson's there and he's got the dummy head or the dummy leg and, you know, you twist the whatever into this and then, you know, you're like, well, that's okay, but how does it work on a real, and you don't know. So this lets you evaluate that product. So we've got a whole list of folks that, product out there that, and we were always looking for new and innovative, products. So, this lets you decide what you want to use in your service, what's beneficial for not just your service, but what's going to save lives in your community.
And I have to throw in one more thing because I know Jamie's trying to wrap it up, but
right.
Your staff is wonderful. I mean, they're not only very highly educated, but they're entertaining. I mean, I never got bored in it and how they were explaining some potentially really dry subject matter to people. And what I loved was the looks on the faces of these people that were, I mean, Joe was talking about basic airway, and these people were enraptured with how he was explaining things they probably never heard before. So I had to throw that out. It's not just, you know, the motive training and all the wonderful things you provide is part of the experience, but it's the staff you have as well.
Well, we are so blessed, and we're very selective on our education members and our facilitators. All of them, you know, have degrees of higher learning and a host of years of experience. But entertaining is a good word. But what I think that we bring that's different is I have never seen anybody fall asleep in one of our classes or courses. It's amazing as a EMS educator to see and you've seen it because you've been to the classes is that student is just engaged and it's hands on and it's 3D. It's not 2D. It's not textbook. It's not, here we go. How about this? It's not death by PowerPoint. And PowerPoint's a great tool. Don't get me wrong. I use it, but at some point you got to break away from it, and you got to get your hands into it, and that stress immersion. You know, that's where we lose a lot of people, right, in the real world. And so we want to be able to make our mistakes. We want to be able to learn in that environment where you can, you know, most of us that are in this field, you know, we don't come into it when we're 18. Generally, a lot of us don't. Or if we do, we're adult learners, and that's how we learn. We learn by doing. And so that's kind of what our motto is there.
And you can find those guys. That's okay. No, that's all right. You can find those guys over at ParagonMedicalGroup.com, ParagonMedEDU on Twitter, and you can find them in numerous places, Facebook and elsewhere, always linked to directly from the front page over at disasterpodcast.com. So if you can't find them anywhere else, you can link to them right there. But check them out, and maybe this is the opportunity that you bring in for that big training this year in your system and really do something new and exciting for the providers and other healthcare professionals in your system. And I urge you to do that. Jim, thanks for coming on the show again this week, and it's always great to have you.
It was a pleasure to be here. And you guys stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, the usual social media fun places, Sam Bradley in most places, Sam Bradley 11 on Twitter, and most certainly on the Disaster Podcast website. disasterpodcast.com, where we would like to hear from you. And where would we find the PodMedic?
Well, PodMedic in most places on social media is where you can find me. And, of course, over at disasterpodcast.com, where we want to hear back from you. So leave a comment. Get on there. Share your thoughts. What do you want to see? What kind of experiential training would you like to bring into your system that maybe Joe and the gang can put together a class for? These are the types of questions you can ask us about. What terrorist events are you most worried about in your area? That's always a great topic. So let's get involved here. Be an active member of the community here at disasterpodcast.com and get over there and leave some comments for us. When you leave a comment, it emails us and we can get back in there and leave a comment back for you and reach out to you. So please, please go ahead and get involved and make this your podcast as much as it is our podcast. We really appreciate that. You know, Sam, we've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about terrorism. We've talked about education and training and ways to make all of that more relevant. And, you know, it tells me a lot about the various and many different things that come up with disaster medicine.
And it's pretty clear, Jamie, that we're never going to run out of material. The minute you think you are, something else comes along. And any of these topics we've discussed, we could go on for days and bring on. We have a lot of great guests coming on, too. And, of course, we have EMS Expo coming up very soon, so we'll be doing a lot from there. We'll be talking more about that in the next few weeks, I think. But the message is, as always, that disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.